Hello, everybody, and welcome into Spotlight. Of course, this is Country Music Mar, and this is my first time doing this. I am honored and privileged to be here because I am going to be interviewing today one of my very good friends. I've known this gentleman for, oh gosh, I've been trying to figure out, probably close to 10 years. And he's a great country musician. We've swapped a lot of old country music stories. And he goes by Tomcat on this service. I'd like you to welcome in Mr. Tom Kaufman. And the music you are hearing in the background is a song that Tom wrote. And he's playing steel guitar on here. And as you can tell by the sound of this music, it is great. So let's get started. Welcome to you, Tomcat.
Is it my turn now? I guess it is. Okay. Hello, everybody. This is Tom, or Tomcat.
It's great to have you here, Tom. And I guess we're going to try to go as chronologically as we possibly can. And so we're going to start out at the beginning. It's a good place to start, if you ask me. And I just wanted to touch briefly on, of course, a lot of us who are on this site have various things that have caused our vision loss, and I'm curious, first of all, about the circumstances surrounding your birth. First of all, where were you born?
Well, I was born in 1953, and I was born in Easton, Maryland, if you're going to be technical about it, because that's where the hospital was, and is. I live in Denton, Maryland. And as far as my blindness was concerned, what caused that? My mother was she contracted German measles when she was carrying me, and that's how I came out. I had two cataracts. One of them was removed, and the other one wasn't. So there you go.
Okay, Tom. And so you had cataracts, and has your sight always been the same, or was it better when you were younger?
Actually, when I was younger, it was some better. I never could read print. I always used Braille when I was going to school. But at one time, it was better. I had a lot, maybe a lot more wouldn't be a good choice of words, but I had more sight in my right eye. That was my good eye. And then because of various operations that I went through and optic nerve damage and the like, it's not that good right now. So I mainly rely on my left eye.
All right. Well, we will move on then to, do you have any memories of your childhood, like preschool childhood years that stick out in your memory that you'd like to talk about? Perhaps even how you became interested in music?
Well, actually, I'm glad you brought that up because there's a couple of things that I remember. Early childhood, you're talking about preschool. And the reason I bring this up because there's a really good chance that you might hear this sound during the course of the interview. I have an old mantle clock back here. It's an old Seth Thomas mantle clock that belongs to my grandmother. And at the time, before I started school, my grandmother lived here in town. They moved out and lived into a trailer that was on the piece of property that we had. But back in those days, my grandparents lived here in town, in the town of Denton. And my mother would bring me in to her house each day on her way to work. She worked, and my grandmother looked after me while Mom was working. And Grandma had this clock, and I have very vivid memories of that clock striking. It struck on the hour and on half hour. And I can remember sitting on my grandma's lap. My grandma, she loved to rock, and I can remember being in her rocking chair and listening to that clock go off, announcing the hour, and I strongly believe that might have been, kind of on a subconscious level, that might have been how I was starting to learn how to tell time, listening to that clock when it was strike. So, it's kind of a sentimental piece, and like I said earlier, I bring that up because it might even be that if you listen real close, you might even hear ticking way off in the background there. That's the same old clock that as a preschooler.
What a neat story. I just love things like that. And I have similar memories from my childhood, although I didn't have any grandmas. Both of them passed away before I was born. Now, did you go to a school for the blind?
Yes, I did. I went to the Maryland School for the Blind, which is in Baltimore, Maryland. I started there in 1959 and graduated in 1972.
Was it difficult for you to leave home and go to school?
Yes, very so. And I don't say this to bring anybody down or make anybody feel bad, but it's something that I wish could have been different. I would have loved to have been able to go to school in the morning, come home at night, but that wasn't the case. And while most people get over that sort of thing when they get older, for some reason, or maybe there are several reasons, but I never did.
Well, I'll tell you something, my friend. I can definitely relate because it was difficult for me as well. Was there a time that you can remember when you started making friends and things like that and it got a little better?
Yeah, maybe when I got a little bit older, it got better, as you say. But, I still felt more comfortable when I was home for some reason. It just seemed I was happier there when I was home. But, yeah, I did manage to make a few friends. In fact, I have pretty much a lifelong friend that I've stayed in touch with. He used to live in Eastern Maryland. He now lives in Westminster. He's a very successful school teacher, in fact. And he and I keep in touch. We correspond by tape, and we email each other now and then and call each other and that sort of thing.
Speaking of school teachers, were there any school teachers in the course of your education that specifically stuck out in your mind as someone who was really a mentor to you as you were going to school?
Well, I don't know that I call them mentors as such, but there's two people that that stick out in my mind that that were memorable. They were nice folks, in fact. One of them, I was fortunate enough to be in her class twice, once in the first grade and once again in the fourth grade. She was a very nice lady named Chris Ball. And then, later on when I was in high school, I took a course in piano tuning and repair. And there was a guy there named Dick Bennett. And Mr. Bennett was one of the subjects that I kind of paid attention to and maybe applied myself to a little bit more. Because I had thought that's what I was going to be doing when I graduated, I was going to tune pianos. And in fact, I did do some of that. And I was lucky enough to correspond with him for a little while a few years ago. And he told me that he knew that I was having certain problems. And he said that if he had known at the time what those problems were, he would have tried to get help. But he did. I could feel one of the reasons I think I got along well in that particular class is I felt like that he sort of was in my corner, and he was trying to help as best that he could.
It's always neat to come across somebody like that, especially when you're growing up and trying to figure out who you are and things like that. It's always nice to have people that you can respect and look up to and things like that. Now, did your interest in music cultivate as a result of a school experience, or did it actually happen away from school?
Well, I guess it would be more like I did take some piano lessons at school, but then I also took piano lessons one summer when I was let me back up a step. During the summer, I did get to be home, and I think the year that I was eight, I did take piano lessons from a lady that her daughter had gone to school there at the Maryland School for the Blind. But I guess what really got my interest, somewhere along that time, or maybe a few years later, I really began to get interested in country music. So I guess to answer your question, it would be more like outside of school, because I got to listen to people like Hank Williams, and from there, it got to it led me to other artists. I can't get my brain and my mouth to work at the same time here, but hopefully you guys understand what I'm saying. So I guess to answer that question, I guess it would be more outside the school as opposed to in school.
Did you have problems like a lot of us had when you started really getting interested in country music, where the school teachers told you, don't play that country music? I know I had the same problem. I remember I took voice lessons, and this lady said, don't slide like you're singing a Western. And I said, well, I'm a country singer. What do you expect, you know? So did you have any experiences like that?
No, you know, I don't think I ever had any teachers ever tell me that. But what I did get was, and I always was drawn to country music even before I really started paying attention to who everybody was, because that's what was listened to around the house when I was home. And I hear a lot of these comments from kids like, ooh, hillbilly music, which is what they called it back then. And it didn't do a whole lot for my I don't know what you call it, self-esteem or whatever you want to call that. So, yeah, I felt like that people didn't really want to hear my type of music.
You were country when country wasn't cool, right?
You got it. I was definitely there listening to it when it may not have been the most popular music to listen to. Everybody else was listening to rock and roll, and I listened to that too. I listened to the Beatles, and I guess when I really made the changeover was, like I said, about 1964, I guess, when I really started changing. I got more into country as the years rolled on.
Were you involved in any school-related music events, like a chorus or orchestra or anything like that?
No, I did get to participate in a few piano recitals, but that's about the extent of it.
Okay, so as great a musician as you are then, what actually happened to get you started playing music?
Well, first of all, my father bought me this guitar. He used to strum guitars, and more or less for his own amusement. And he bought me this. Well, he had seen me dragging his guitar around, trying to figure out things on it. So he finally decided, well, he'd just go ahead and buy me a little Montgomery Ward guitar. I think he only paid like about $15 for it. And he gave it to me for Christmas. And he didn't know whether I would go ahead and play it, which I didn't at first. It sat back in the corner for a little while. But after a while, I started picking it up, and then he started showing me some chords. And it kind of evolved from there. While we're right here, I might as well go ahead and tell you what really helped me, I think. About this same time period, my parents used to go to this, East Vancouver had a dance hall. And the band that played there, Dad met him, and they used to talk sometimes when Mom and Dad, Dad would get talking with this band leader, and he had told him that I had a guitar and everything. And he invited my father to bring him down to his place, which was in Rock Hall, Maryland. And this band consisted of himself and the fellow's name was George Trimble. And it was himself, his brother, and another fellow, a great lead guitarist named Harvey Coleman. Made a long story short, we went down there one night, down to Rock Hall. I very distinctly remember George, we were just kind of fooling around, trying to think of some playing, and George said, just lead guitarist. He said, Harvey, play that little boogie you was fooling with the other night. And he kicked into it, and I'm like, that's it, you know, because up until that time, there was a guy that used to come to the house that used to jam a little bit with my father, and I thought he was pretty good. But I heard this fella playing, it's like, oh, right, this is like right here on records. Went on, I just started copying everything that I heard him do.
So you would play your recordings and play along with it and try to imitate the instrumentalist that you heard?
Yeah, that's basically what I would do. My folks would carry a cassette recorder with them to the dances. I had them taped. And I started learning a lot of his licks, and I got really enthralled in that band that they had. I don't know if it was a great band. It was a good little dance band, and played a lot of, you know, hillbilly music. It was just a little four-piece ensemble at the time, but I enjoyed that sound, and that's kind of what I tried to pattern myself after.
That's really, really neat. Yeah, I remember doing those kinds of things too. And when was the first time that you actually played with a band?
Well, the first time I sat in with the band was George's group, George Trimble's group. I actually carried my guitar. My father had gotten me a Fender Telecaster, and we took it down to this place where they, to this dance hall, and I sat in. But now, if you're talking the first job that I ever had, that didn't come till like 1973.
So you sat in with the band, right, Tom? You were saying that you had sat in with the same band that you had listened to at the dance hall, right?
I sat in with the band with my guitar, and incidentally, that would result in a long stint where, like, we would go down there, and you know, my folks started bringing me to the dances with them, and I'd get up and play for maybe a set. I played lead guitar player's guitar. I just sat in. I'd, you know, take over his slot for a little while. But I joined my first band in 1973. There was this guy named Stoney Mowbray. He had a little band called Stoney and the Country Lads. And he heard about me somehow, and somebody contacted me and wanted to know if I'd be interested in filling in this particular evening, which I did, and I ended up joining the band, and the band stayed together for a little while, and it wasn't that long, really. But it's funny, as I look back on that, we thought we were good back then, you know. We thought we were pretty hot, but thinking back, we weren't all so good.
I see. Well, that's interesting. Now, was this after high school? Obviously, because you said it was in 73, or were you still in high school when this happened?
The part where I was going down to Butler's Inn, which was the name of the little establishment, that was when I was still in school. But by the time I actually joined the band Stoney and the Country Lads, that would be the year after I graduated. It was in 73.
That's really neat. I can remember those feelings of playing with my first band and how cool it was. So then when did you start getting interested in playing steel and fiddle?
Well, actually, believe it or not, I got into the fiddle before I got into the steel. I got my first fiddle, and there again, that came as a result of listening to that same band, George Trimble, and I mentioned that he had a brother that played. His brother played electric mandolin, but he also played fiddle, mainly for a thing they used to do back in those days they used to have some Paul Joneses. You guys that dance might know a little bit of something about how that's done. But what he would do is sometimes he'd get the fiddle out and play Paul Jones on it. And, you know, he'd play them old tunes like, you know, some of the old traditional things like Ragtime Annie, and he played one called Up Jump Trouble. And then, of course, there's always the real famous one, the Orange Blossom Special. And I got into that. And so in 1972, I got my first fiddle. And so I kind of got to where I could play that. And then I got interested in the steel along about 1975, somewhere along in there. I got my first steel in 75, as a matter of fact.
That's interesting. And so, when you decided you wanted to learn how to play steel, because I know I've taught a person steel guitar in as much as I could, I didn't know much about the mechanics of it, but when you got interested in steel, which is a very hard instrument to play, how did you even discover you could play one? Did you go to a music store and look at one? I'm sorry, guys, you'll have to indulge me, but steel is my favorite instrument in the whole world, and I'm just really interested in this story.
Surprisingly, there was another band at this time that we were going to listen to, and they just hired a steel player, and I kind of liked what he was doing, and I figured, you know, I discovered that I was playing some of his licks on my lead guitar, and I thought, well, hey, I wonder if I could learn to do this on the right instrument. So, like I said, in I guess it was about 1975, I bought a little string on that MSA steel guitar and just started working on it, you know, and just picked up what I could from a couple really good steel players in the area that I heard do certain things, certain licks, and I just, you know, it just kind of evolved. I got my first job as a steel player in 76. And the interesting thing about that is a guy hired me, and he had never heard me play the steel before. He heard me play lead, and he heard me play fiddle, but he had not heard me play steel, but he knew that I was learning how to play it, and he wanted something different in the band, so he went to work and hired me.
Did somebody actually teach you the mechanics of playing the steel, or did you figure that out yourself? And also, as a blind steel player, were there any tactile, because unlike a guitar, for those of you who don't know, when you play a steel, a lot of it is done, they have painted frets on the steel guitar neck, but because you're not actually pushing down fingered frets, you have to position your bar in the appropriate position. Did someone make that fingerboard tactile for you when you first started?
Yes, my father, when I first started, he took a board, a piece of ply board, and put nails in it, and put those nails in the appropriate places, and I learned that way. As far as somebody actually showing me things, I did go down to this, to a guy's house one time, and he showed me a few licks. You know, once I figured out how, you know, where things were, and, you know, he showed me a little bit of that, where different things were, but then a lot of what I did on my own. But that was how I started. My father put that board on there with the nails. What happened one night, I don't know how long it was after that, maybe about a year or something like that. I don't even know if I was playing in a band yet. I don't think I was. But we had gone to a jam session one night, and the board came off. And I managed to go ahead and play it some kind of way. So he asked me if I wanted him to put the board back on. I told him no. I said, let's leave it off and see how, you know, that would be kind of like putting training wheels, if I can get my mouth to work, putting training wheels on a bicycle. So I just went ahead and went on with it that way.
Well, there you go. That's the way to do it. Have you had the opportunity to work with any celebrity steel players?
Well, I've never what you call worked with any celebrity steel players, but I did meet somebody that's a celebrity steel player. There's a guy named Buddy Charlton. And Buddy Charlton was a longtime steel guitarist with the Texas Troubadours, which is was Ernest Tubbs' band, the Texas Troubadours. Buddy played steel from about 1962 till sometime in the 70s. He gives lessons now, and this is about how I met him. A friend of mine took me. He takes lessons from Buddy, and I saw him one time, and I don't know, somehow it came up in a conversation about me, you know, getting to meet him someday. So he took me over to one of his lesson sessions, and instead of Buddy giving him the lesson, Buddy and I just sat there and jammed for a little while, and that's kind of a special memory to me, because for those of you who don't know, I don't know how many Ernest had out in the 60s called Waltz Across Texas. Buddy's the guy that plays that really pretty a steel guitar break on there. We played that song once in a while. And I think about old Buddy, but I can say that I was fortunate enough to meet the man.
Okay, so now you are presently employed with a band called the Jones Boys. And they're a great band. I've heard them play several times. And how did you wind up in that band?
Well, okay, as you said, I'm currently working with the Jones Boys and have been for over 10 years. It'll be 11 years this New Year's Eve, actually. How that all came about originally, back in 1990, two of the boys were already working in another band. Well, I need to back up here and tell you that there was a band called the Jones Boys Plus One. Oh, no, I'm wrong. They were called the good old boys, and then they were called the Good Old Boys Plus One. But anyway, it consisted of the two boys and their dad, and they later on added a lady that's when they changed it to Plus One. But anyway, by this point, that band had broken up. But in 1990, this Farmers Carnival, which is held in Sharptown, Maryland every year, the president of the Farmers Carnival knew Jim, who was Darren and Brett's father, and I think that what happened was he contacted them about putting something together, for you know, to play. For me, and as if I was sitting, I had just left another band, and I was just kind of filling in. So I helped them with this particular job. And then there was a couple other jobs I helped them out on. They weren't really officially, but I mentioned to Darren that if ever a time came where he, you know, they decided to put their own band together, to let me know. Well, about a year later, they left the band that they were working in, and Darren decided to, you know, to put together the Jones Boys, and he called me.
Okay, well, I'm going to play another song here, because this is, to me, a neat song. And the reason I think it's neat is not only because it is the Jones Boys, the band that you're currently playing with, but it also kind of has a little bit of common denominator, I guess, with the story that you told in the beginning about your grandma. And only this isn't grandma's clock, it is grandma's quilt. And this is the Jones Boys, along with Tom playing steel guitar and fiddle.
I was only 6 when grandma called me to her side. A homemade quilt upon her lap, smiled at me with pride. She said, I want you to have this dear before my life is through. There's lots of love and memories here, and I made it just for you. The center square contains the three-room house your grandpa built, our little dog named Scotty, and the bottom of the quilt. And over on the right you'll see our old black Model T. Standing proudly at the top is our first Christmas tree. Grandma's quilt was made from old feed sacks and clothes that wouldn't fit. Squares all sewn together with the border all round it. And each square told a story that was part of Grandma's life. Like a storybook made just for me by my grandpa's wife.
Get the chance to tell that gentleman that wrote that song that I think it is cool, go ahead and do so, because I just love that song. That is great. Grandma's Quilt there with Tom Cat along with his band, the Jones Boys. Was that a studio recording? It sounded pretty good.
Yeah, yes, it wasn't. It was recorded in a little shed with a little 8-track machine there. That's how that was done. And I also was not to shoot my own horn, but I was playing guitar on that thing too.
Rhythm guitar, right?
No.
Yeah, I knew you played lead, steel, and fiddle, and I thought I'd mentioned that, but maybe not. Great job. And are there any other experiences that you would like to share with us before I open it up for question and answers?
Well, there's one thing, little piece of trivia, whatever you want to call it, that the folks might be interested in. I was fortunate enough to sit in with another band that backed Mel Street. I don't know how much I really how much of a contribution I was. I played fiddle, but I was playing it over the mic. And playing fiddle over the mic when you got a whole band in back of you, it's a little hard to get all the adjustments right. But that was me getting to meet and to work that vibe when I did that.
That's neat. It's always fun to do stuff like that. Didn't you open for who was it? Restore my memory on that. You opened for some celebrity too, didn't you?
Well, let me think. When I was a member of the band called the Thunderbirds, we opened for the Kitty Wells Johnny Wright show at a place called Sunset Park, which is in Pennsylvania. And then we also opened for Billy Crash Craddock one time. There was a disc jockey that tried to have some country shows in Smyrna, at the old Smyrna Theater, Smyrna, Delaware. And it was a short-lived thing, but I think, in fact, the last show that he did, I think it was that one where we opened for Crash Paddock.
Yeah, I want to say somebody just a couple of years ago that you and the Jones Boys opened for, and I just can't remember who that was. I remember you telling me about it on tape.
We opened for Hank Williams III, this fella named Curtis Andrew, who has American Corner Auction. American Corner is a little community not too far from where I am. And he has an auction on, I think it's on Thursday nights. But he decided to put on some country shows, and the first one he did was that one that Mars speaks of. Hank Williams III was the headliner, and they hired the Jones Boys.
Okay. You broke up on the end of that too, but basically they hired your band, and that's really neat. Okay, well, I think we'll leave it open for a few questions and answers, and see if anybody has anything that they're dying to know about you.
Is there much a difference in rhythm guitar and steel?
Yeah, there's a lot of difference between rhythm guitar and steel. Rhythm, basically, you can play it. You can play rhythm guitar, and basically, all you do is play chords. You're playing steel guitar. You're playing lead. There's a considerable difference there.
Tom, have you ever been to Nashville?
Yes, I have. I've been there several times. In fact, we were fortunate enough. The Jones Boys were able to play in Nashville. Now, the venue wasn't really that big of a deal. It was at the Moose Lodge in Nashville. But yes, we did play there. In fact, I have some, I have a lot of that on tape where we did that. But yeah, I've made several, we've been on vacation several times, and that's where we would go.
Have you ever played in Atlanta?
No, sir, never have.
Tom, it's BJ from Scotland. Congratulations on having such a wonderful talent. I play guitar myself and banjo, and I tried steel guitar some years ago and didn't quite master it, but definitely congratulations to you, and congratulations on creating a beautiful sound and you know, with an instrument which is so powerful in country music. Of your many musical experiences, which one do you remember most?
Oh, golly. Well, first of all, thank you, BJ, for your compliment there. It'd be hard to pick out just one. There's been several. Like I mentioned, the time that I worked with Mel Street, that was definitely one. The first job that I worked as a steel player with a guy named Eddie Cheesem, that would be one. That was memorable because I was nervous as a cat at a dog show on that one. The first time, another one that's kind of memorable was the first time I set in with George Trimble and his outfit. That was the first time I really actually played in public, I guess, or played bar in public. And I can still remember my knees shaking that night. So they're civil. It seemed like there was something else you asked, but I can't remember what it is.
Tomcat, I know you said you and Mar have known each other for quite some time. Have you ever had the opportunity to perform together?
No, I'm afraid we haven't. In fact, Mar and I have never actually met each other personally. We started corresponding back in, I believe it was 97. We had a little tape correspondence going, and that's how we got to know each other. But that would be neat to be able to do that.
Hopefully at the For the People party in May. That would be so wonderful to hear.
Well, I can't make any promises about that, but if I happen to get there, that would be something that I would hope to do, would be to play music with Mar. That would be really neat.
Tom, I had the pleasure of meeting a young lady called Sarah Jory a week past Sunday, who won European steel player, European musician of the year. She plays pedal steel guitar. I wonder if maybe once this is finished I can get your email address, and I'd love to send her some tapes or some recordings of you. I know she would love to hear you, Tom.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good. It seems like I've heard that name. I don't know if I saw it on there's a list that I'm on. It's a blind musicians list, and maybe that's where I saw that. You might be on that same list.
No, but is that the Peach Musicians list?
No, it's a different one, isn't it, Tom? I think we'll take one more question after this, unless Dennis has more recording time. But I know he only has a certain amount of time to be able to record.
Hi, Tom. This is Glenn, and hi, Mar, again. I don't actually have a question. I just wanted to say I enjoyed the interview, and I've heard Mar sing, of course, in person, live, and all that. And after today, I've heard you play the steel and the fiddle, so I have to agree that you probably sure would sound good together.
Yeah, that would be nice if we could do that sometime. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I hope that my part of the interview was okay. I apologize for all the internet problems and whatnot. Sometimes, like Mar pointed out, those things happen from time to time.
I guess I shouldn't ask this, but I'm going to anyway. I know that Tom fairly recently wrote a song. Mar, do you have it, or does anybody have it? I just kind of... Personally, I'd like to hear it again, and I think it would really show off Tom's talent. Tom is a pretty modest person, but I think he does a super job.
I don't have a recording of that particular song. I'm sure Tom has it, but it would have to be played through the speakers, and I'm not sure if we have enough time to feature that song at this point. But it is a great song. I know exactly which one you're referring to.
Yes, I do have it. In fact, I was thinking of playing it, but then if it's something that must be played through the sound card, I can't do that. Sorry. But I appreciate you asking. And that song, actually, in a small way, Mar is kind of responsible for the name that I put on that song. Mar and I were in a part of a country music group on... Well, it started on E-Voice, and it later moved to One Box. And I had written this song, and I didn't really have a name for it, so I played it for the group, and I asked if anybody had any suggestions for a name. Well, Mar came up with the name Don't Steal My Heart. Well, one of the other fellows in the group thought that she had said, stealing from my heart. And I thought, hey, that sounds pretty good, so that's kind of what I went with.
Tom, would you play it after, even through the speakers, after the interview is over? I'm sure people would want to hear it.
I would love to hear it.
Well, if we can encompass it in the interview, I'd be happy to just let it go. I think it'd be a great way to round it out here. Tom, you got it. Meanwhile, while Tom's looking for that, if anybody wants to add any short additional comments, we can do that. We'll give Tom maybe about 60 seconds or so, or maybe as long as it takes for him to get that together. And if anybody wants to add anything briefly, they're welcome to do so at this point.
I'd like to thank you both, Maura and Tom, for the interview. I enjoyed it very much.
Let us know there when you're ready, Tom.
Okay, I'm ready. Let me just get my control key locked down, and we will go ahead and get it going. Hang on just a second here.
That was absolutely and positively fantastic. Great job, great song, and you're really a great musician. You definitely are. And it's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. I would like to thank all of you for joining us as well. Of course, this is Country Music Mar. This has been Spotlight. And our guest of honor today has been Tom Kaufman, also known as Tomcat here on For the People. I appreciate everybody for your patience with all the internet glitches and all the things that we've had going on here. But it's just one of those things that happens, I guess, with the cyber world. But this was my first interview. I was very honored and privileged to be able to talk to this wonderful gentleman who has been a great friend of mine for about 5 years, I guess, as it turns out. I thought it was longer than that, but
Anyway, that goes to show you how much I keep track of as far as time things go. But I'm looking forward to doing several more here on Spotlight. This has been a great time for me and a great experience. I was really scared at the beginning, but as we got going and things like that, I just became totally immersed in just conversing with one of my friends. And that's what Spotlight is all about. Thanks to everybody for dropping by. We'll be back on next Saturday at the same time, 1:30 Eastern, with another edition of Spotlight. So everybody have a great weekend, and I look forward to talking to each and every one of you on For the People. Bye for now.